ROCKS.com, LVRocks.com. Listen to The Wise Guy Show on the web from noon to 2 at LVRocks.com.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you for everybody listening to the program live, and thank you, of course, everybody listening to the podcast. Thank you very much. The podcast downloads took a little shot in the arm last week, so thank you very much, everybody listening to the podcast. And, of course, everybody listening to the archives over on S2DRadio.com and Everybody listening in the chat room, we have Anorexic Pillow, Chris 1019, Giorgio, NetRanger, myself, and the John. So thank you very much. That was the producer, Mr. Consoler. Thank you very much for producing the program. And this is actually the third season of Subject to Discussion.
By your command.
How surprised that lasted 1 week. But anyway, yes. So 2 years, 2 year anniversary is today. Today, as a matter of fact, and then this is the third season. So no big to do because Daily Noise had an anniversary. And didn't really do too much. I figured, what the hell, I might as well just follow along. But so it's been amazing. I started it back in the election season of 04, in September of 04, just lead up to the presidential election, of course, with Kerry and Bush. And I had a co-host then, it was Debbie Hall, and I actually was with her. I was able to do it because I was nervous about doing a program by myself because I had just done all the wrestling shows with co-hosts and everything, so I'd never done a program alone before. So she agreed to come on with me, and she was with me for the first 3 weeks, and then she bailed out. And then I ended up doing the program by myself. And so I thank Khan, and of course thank you to Jimmy Diggs for giving me the chance to do the program and taking it in its liberal direction. So I thank you very much for that. He probably lives to regret it every Tuesday. But anyway, a bunch of good guys here at LV Rocks. And I want to thank everybody who's been along the way. Of course, Mark, he does the Eve News Network program now on LV Rocks. And then, of course, Rolando was along the way. I thank him. And then Saab Lofton, he made the first few months of the show living hell, but you learn from adversity. So I actually like to thank him as well. So anyway, and of course, Media Boulevard's stepped up to help us out with the program, getting the word out and everything, and helping with the S2DRadio.com website. So I thank them as well. And the first guest we had on in the years ago, 2 years ago, was Michael Badnarik. He was the Libertarian candidate for president. And we had him on the first program. And then the second one or third one, I lost track, was either the Votergasm girl. I think that was her. She was on the second one. And then the Newt Gingrich, had him on. Actually, it was an interview he did at an autograph signing here in Las Vegas. I happened to have a recorder and taped him. And then Shelley Berkeley. So that's been, of course, all the cast members from Galactica. So, all of them, especially Katie Sackhoff. So but it's been interesting. So, and before we get to the News Digest, after the News Digest, Michael J.W. Stickings of the Reaction blog will be along to discuss politics with us. And in the second hour, we're going to kind of load up for the second anniversary with the regulars that have been very good to me during the last year or so, is Jamie with the Stargate Reviews, and then Dr. NetRanger, the mad scientist, will be along for a pop culture discussion, and Koenig Rules, the Mad Professor will be along to discuss the Doctor Who season premiere coming up, and as well as Battlestar Galactica. And I told them all, hopefully we got to keep this in that second hour nice and succinct. They're 15, 18 minutes each, and then we got to roll along to the next guest. So hopefully we'll keep it rolling.
Or I'll have to cue the silence.
You have to cue the silence to kill them off. So, and I'll have a special comment about President Bush in a moment. And then, of course, everybody's a big to-do over this Clinton business on the Fox News Sunday. And I thought, well, you know what, President Clinton was loud and angry and confrontational. And you know what, I think now would be a good time for the Fox News Channel to give him his own talk show. So that's what I think. And in the newspaper, of course, we had the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We have the headlines. Of course, with Georgia put in a chat room from the New York Times. Vatican excommunicates Zambian Archbishop. The clerical career of Emmanuel Malingo, a faith healer who returned to the church after a group wedding in 2001, presided over the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, appears to be over. Wow. So, of course, the Reverend Moon owns the Washington Times newspaper. So, and of course, in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, I talk about the hopefuls face off in debate for governor, Dina Titus. I hope she wins and takes his John McCain acting looking Jim Gibbons to the cleaners, and hopefully. And, of course, I talk about the game last night, Monday Night Football, with the New Orleans Saints returning to the Superdome. And where else? Yeah. Pope tries to mend fences. Of course, he's in a big trouble over what he said. He quoted from some scripture about the Muslims. Like I said, I have some sympathy for the Pope, but not too much, because he's the one that propagated the priest sex abuse of boys. So, I mean, really, my sympathy for him goes as far as the door here to the studio. And in the Nevada section, we had on-the-job sex case spurs reform. They're trying to, state employees, trying to regulate state employees for not having sex on the job. There was an officer, apparently, Lovelock Correctional Center officer Annie L. Bianchini received a 30-day suspension for engaging in oral sex with a fellow officer, Sean Hofferer, in a prison restroom. So, gives a new addition to the term of taking a load off, I guess, but up. And then they talk about Ensign, John Ensign. He's running. Of course, he's the one that is the one that gives a rectal exam to dogs and cats. And Ensign retains substantial lead. He is apparently a 23-point lead over Jack Carter, who's the son of Jimmy Carter, the president. And they talk about the little hotel. It's a rooming house for down-and-outers downtown. It's closing. And a few other things, blah, blah, blah. And in the USA Today, and actually, John is correcting me. He didn't quote scripture. He quoted a Byzantine emperor from the Middle Ages. Oh, well, I think things from the Middle Ages are ancient quotation. It could be scripture. I don't know. Did he write it down? How else did he quote the Byzantine emperor? So I don't know. And in USA Today, they say after 11 years, home prices are falling. And also on the right, to talk about liquids now. You could bring lip gloss or tangerine lip gloss, as Peter Graves says in that commercial. Liquid's not as risky as first feared. And what else? The Pentagon extends Iraq combat tours for 3,800 soldiers. Brigade to stay an extra 46 days. And the Pentagon said Thursday the 3,800 U.S. soldiers will be staying in Iraq about 6 weeks. 6 weeks beyond their one-year combat tours as coalition forces grapple with violence in and around Baghdad. And in the life section, talk about the big Star Trek auction that they're going to be having. When is this going to be? Next week, Christie's is going to auction off a whole truckload of Star Trek things. The Captain Picard's jumper is on there, as well as the chair that they built for the original ship on the Deep Space Nine episode Trials and Tribulations, and also Kirk's uniform for Star Trek Generations. So that'd be nice. And the original Enterprise A model is going to go between $15,000 and $25,000. So incredible. So with that, move on to the political news digest. Let's see. Giorgio is saying that the Pope in the chat room. Giorgio is saying the Pope is from the old school of the church that says the church can do no wrong. It seems to be the similar holier-than-thou attitude that Bush takes, but anyway. My little comment here about Bush, of course, he was on CNN's Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer on Sunday, and he said, I like to tell people when the final history is written on Iraq, it'll look just like a comma. So, and I said, here it is. I said, how appalling that a sitting president would simply write off a major conflict that is still going on in his own administration and that has lasted longer than our involvement in World War II, as insignificant as a comma. Excuse me. Are the 3,000 troops that have died in Iraq a comma to Bush? What about the two who were the ones in the footage released over the weekend on TV of their bodies being dragged through the streets of Baghdad on fire? Are they all commas to Bush? Why don't we ask their families if their deceased loved ones are commas to them? They all died in Iraq for your asinine obsession with Iraq, President Bush. Their blood is on Bush's hands. Bush is the commander-in-chief, and the buck, unfortunately, stops at his desk for right now. How can Bush look at the dead and injury reports and brush it off as simply as a comma? More troops have died in Iraq than people died in 9/11, and anywhere from 20,000 to 60,000 plus have been injured or maimed, and yet Bush refers to all that as a comma. Bush has plundered our national treasury for $500 billion to date on this debacle in Iraq, and he refers to it as a comma. Abu Ghraib, Haditha, secret CIA prisons, waterboarding, contractors' scandals, inept people put in charge of reconstruction, and $9 billion gone without a trace. And Bush refers to it all as a comma. Our country's reputation is in tatters across the globe. Whispers of war crimes charges and reports saying Iraq is making the war on terror worse. And it's still all a comma to Bush. Bush violates the Constitution at will. He, Shooter Cheney, and Rummy, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and Tweedledo-nothing, act holier than thou and call us who disagree with the Iraq plan of the day as Nazi sympathizers. He came into office promising at the beginning of both terms to unite the country, and yet the country has never been more divided. President Clinton on Fox News Sunday gave all Democrats, either left or progressive left, the clarion call to get the hell off our chairs and fight the Republicans. The evidence each day is on our side. President Bush and the GOP have us on this runaway locomotive and ahead that bridge is out. You must use the facts and use it as a boot to the throat of the Republicans and not let them up. In addition to Iraq, we must also use the despicable display Bush and the GOP put on in that veiled abortion battle known as the Schiavo mess. For a Congress and president to involve themselves in a personal family matter for pure geopolitical and fundraising advantage is something we should all remember as a sickening display that it was. If Bush thinks the war in Iraq is just a comma, then come November, we Democrats will plant an exclamation point on his ass. So there you go. So now I'll move on to the News Digest. And from today, they had reactions to President Clinton on Fox News Sunday. This is from New York Times. Some Republicans have suggested that a furious response by Mr. Clinton to the Fox interview viewers' questioning was more calculated than it might have seemed, aimed at pushing the Democrats to fight back when accused of being weak on terror. Absolutely. It took Clinton to wake all the Democrats up. I've been saying for a while, we got to start swinging against these damn Republicans. Mr. Clinton's wife, Senator Hillary Clinton of New York, appeared to say as much. She said, "I just think that my husband did a great job in demonstrating that Democrats are not going to take this," she told Newsday on Monday. The political advisor, James Carville, told NBC News Today that his former boss had given Democrats a spinal implant. So, well, that's all they needed now to rally the troops, so let's hope so. And also from today, with an eye on the presidency, George Pataki is to open an office in Iowa. You know him, he looks like Principal Belding from Saved by the Bell. Governor George E. Pataki plans to head back to Iowa on Friday to open an office for his political action committee. Not only to help candidates in November, members of his staff said yesterday, but also to lay more groundwork for his own possible presidential bid in 2008. He stands about as much chance of being elected president as I do. I'm sorry. Somebody looks like Belding, I'm sorry, the American people will not elect him. You know, I hate to burst his bubble, but if. And how about that George Allen fiasco is blowing way up. Now he's being accused of using the N-word and all that stuff. And they were touting him as the next Reagan in 08. So now he's out of the box. There's no way he's going to be able to run for president. So it's going to be apparently McCain, don't know who else is left in the Republican Party that can run. So it's good for the Democrats, and the Republican candidates start going up in flames. And also for today from the Washington Post, not so tough on terror is a question. President Bush's all-important terror-fighting credentials are taking a bruising this week. I didn't know he had any credentials. Former President Clinton has revived charges that Bush didn't take the threat of terrorism seriously enough before September 11th. And an intelligence report indicates that Bush's signature response to terror since the attacks invading Iraq has actually backfired. The result, a potential erosion of Bush's strongest political suit at the worst possible moment for a White House already fearful of losing Republican majorities in Congress in November. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, oh, I forgot. Everybody's asking me the time of the program's on. Okay, it's 7 o'clock in Las Vegas. It means it's 8 o'clock in Denver in the Mountain Time Zone. It's 9 o'clock in Chicago in the Central Time Zone. And it's 10 o'clock in Eastern Time Zone, of course. And then even in the RST Time Zone, which is Republican Standard Time, it's always, always 9-11. So, anyway, and the next story comes from today. Jane Harman, a congresswoman from California, she calls for a release of a second secret Iraq report. She says there's a secret damning Iraq report floating around the intelligence community. At least that's according to Representative Jane Harman of California, the top Democrat in the House Intelligence Committee. At an event this morning, she disclosed the existence of a classified intelligence community report that gives a grim assessment of the situation in Iraq, and called for it to be shared with the American public before the November elections. That's never going to happen. The report has not been shared with Congress, although sources say a draft version, blah, 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 blah. So the report is said to conclude that the war in Iraq has made the U.S. less secure from terrorist threats. Excuse me. So much for that. You know, he's saying, we're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them over here, and yada, yada, yada. And now all these reports are coming out that are saying we're less secure, so... And also from today, Iraq Sunni leader resigns, 21 killed in series of bomb explosions. A Sunni Arab leading a parliamentary committee reviewing new legislation resigned his post on Tuesday to protest a Shiite-sponsored federalism bill he said would lead to further political instability and bloodshed. And during all that was going on, a series of bomb explosions killed at least 21 people and wounded dozens in and around Baghdad on Tuesday, while police found the bodies of 19 men scattered around the capital. Wow. I mean, that's a horrible, horrible mess, you know? I mean, and he's pulling more troops into the middle of that shooting gallery over there. With that story last week, there'll be clay pigeons over there, you know? Get those troops the hell out of there and put them on the border, for crying out loud. So, and today on the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, they had a Cafferty file, and one of his questions was, do you agree with President Bush that the war in Iraq will be recorded as nothing more than a comma in the history books? And one of the answers from Linda in San Diego, California, she said, Bush can only wish that history will forget the Iraq War. The first time the American public was lied into a preemptive, illegal, ill-advised war and occupation. I don't think so, she said. It was a question. I don't think so. This tragic quagmire has destroyed careers and lives and has left the United States in a weakened position globally. Wow. And another one, who's this guy? Barry writes, the war in Iraq will be remembered as one of the main decisions that brought down the most powerful country the world has ever known. Ooh, horrible wording. And also this one from Ron in Tampa, Florida. This should be posed to the thousands of families who have lost a loved one. Absolutely. It's why I said, how can Bush get up there and say that Iraq will be nothing but a comma when it's over with? Is he nuts? I mean, all that money and billions and billions of dollars, not only in precious blood, but in our treasury getting raped by him. I mean, it's nonsense. And also another question that Jack Cafferty had. He says, do you agree with President Bush? Oh, wait a minute. Did I get this twice? Oh. All right, sorry. And then also from today, from the election update from Tennessee, Harold Ford's prospects keep improving. A new Benenson Strategies Group poll gives Representative Harold Ford a 6-point lead over Bob Corker, Republican, in a race for Tennessee's open U.S. Senate seat. Ford has gained 4 points since August. He's a good. I saw him on... whatever show that was, but actually he made a whole lot of sense. I mean, I'd rather see him run for president than Barack Obama, but, you know, I like Harold Ford. I saw him. He spoke at the convention a few years ago. I saw that speech. He did real well. You know, he speaks to a more a center-left type of Democrat constituency, like the DLC type. He's somewhat against abortion. He should be less and less abortions. He's a moderate Democrat, but I mean, I like his views, and he has a way of explaining things that are very, very well, and where you can understand what he's saying. So I said single syllables for me. I have to sound out the words. And also from today, from CNN, CNN poll says people are ready to vote for Democrats. A new CNN poll conducted by Opinion Research Corporation showed 55% of likely voters said they would vote for a Democrat if the election were held today, while 42% say they would vote for a Republican. Those are the ditto heads and the Sean Insanity listeners and the brainwashed, brain-numbed, and also the Jerry Falwell followers as well, and the Bible thumpers. So, and also today, public thinks Bush is lying about the economy. So I don't think, as I said, this economy isn't doing that well. I don't know where they're getting these clues from. The housing sales are plunging, you know. This economy of ours is strong, Bush said after touring Mayor Tool Incorporated in Cincinnati. The president has had trouble convincing the public that the economy is doing well. Only 4 in 10 people approve of the way he's handling the economy. So, yep. These poll numbers. People are mad. People are just, you know what? I'm going to say the word. They're pissed off at President Bush. You know, they're mad. The economy up and down like a yo-yo. They're mad about this disaster in Iraq, you know, and they're mad about the way he struts around like he's holier than thou, and he thinks he's Jesus as Christ and all that stuff. It's just adding up. This stuff, and pound, and way he sneers. I saw that news conference today where he's with Karzai from Afghanistan, and he's just looks like he's snarling at people, and he's got that grimace and everything. And then you compare that with Clinton, because Clinton was all over the TV this week. He was on Larry King, he was on Meet the Press, he was on Fox News Sunday, and just the way Clinton can talk about things off the top of his head. I didn't see Clinton with any notes, and just it's amazing. It's the two of them side by side. It's like, wow. I mean, it's like night and day with Bush and Clinton. And I was like, can't we find Bush a girl with a blue dress and impeach him already, for crying out loud? Anyway, and the NIE report says that Iraq is breeding deep resentment of the U.S. Bush makes public parts of report on terrorism. On the report, it says the Iraq war has become a cause célèbre for Islamic militants, and that al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups present a serious and continuing threat to the United States. The Iraq jihad is shaping a new generation of terrorist leaders and operatives. Perceived jihadist success there would inspire more fighters to continue the struggle elsewhere. The Iraq conflict has become the cause célèbre for jihadists, blah, blah, blah. The cultivating supporters for a global jihadist movement. So it's 16 intelligence agencies putting out, not the DLC or DNC or whatever the hell. That's the 16 intelligence communities. So intelligence agencies, excuse me. And this one, next one's from Doug Thompson from the Capitol Hill Blue. The terrorist who lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, bad, in George W. Bush's perverted, pathetic, partisan view of the world, anyone who disagrees with his lunacies is not only wrong, but unpatriotic. Oh, he forgot. You have to be a Nazi sympathizer as well. Also a traitor who cannot be trusted and a voice of dissent that must be silenced. Now Bush has a new set of enemies. The National Intelligence Estimate, a compilation of information from seasoned professionals in the many spy agencies that now exist in this country. Completed in April, the NIE is the first interagency assessment of the terror threat worldwide since the invasion of Iraq. It concludes that Bush's dirty little war there has spawned a new generation of terrorists bent on revenge against the United States, those who support our war-mongering. The Bush administration continues to claim falsely that the war in Iraq has reduced the threat of terrorism against the United States. It's a lie. Like just about all the verbal diarrhea that spills out of the mouth of Bush. He's stealing words from me. I said that, the diarrhea of the mouth. Who did they say that about? I said that about Cheney or Rummy, one of them, too. It spills out of the mouth of Bush. Destined to become the most despised, the most venal, the most rights-robbing president of modern times, if not in the entire history of the American Democratic Republic. Woo, he could really let him have it, can't he? I've been trying to get him on the program, but Doug Thompson, he just doesn't do interviews, but it'd be nice to have him on. Boy, he could really sling the mud. And also from today, from the blog, the Fire Dog Lake, The time for accountability is now. Adequate planning is something that we ought to be able to expect from the Bush administration officials in the White House and the Pentagon before soldiers are ever put in harm's way. When that is not done, the Congress has a constitutional and moral obligation to hold them to account, or they should forever be haunted by the deaths and injuries of all those soldiers who put themselves in harm's way, expecting the rest of us to stand up for them on the home front. Our soldiers deserve better, their families deserve better, our nation deserves better. Time for accountability is now. Absolutely. Absolutely. And also from today, Sanatorium, momentum dead in the water. Casey leads by 12 points. A new poll on the senatorial race in Pennsylvania released today by the Quinnipiac University shows that challenger Bob Casey Jr. leading incumbent Rick Santorum by a majority of 12 points. This is an increase of over a 6-point lead Casey had last month. So they're pulling ahead further and further. And also from, Casey's pulling ahead of Santorum. And Giorgio is from WallStreetJournal.com. Bush ordered further declassification of a leading intelligence report to bolster his case that going on the offensive wasn't a mistake, despite findings that the war is boosting recruiting. What the hell? I don't know what he's... It's ridiculous. I mean, how can it be helping when they're creating more terrorists? I mean, even Bush's father said that. So, and where are we at here? Documents given to Rice in early 2001 Condoleezza Rice's claim is false. Clinton gave Bush plans for al-Qaeda and Pakistan. This is a memo that was received by Condoleezza Rice, you know, the girl with the David Letterman smile. It was given to her shortly after becoming the National Security Advisor in 2001. It directly contradicts statements she has made to reporters yesterday. More of this stuff. Yeah, they just make this stuff up, and then we come out with the proof. Oh, well, you know what? You're disagreeing with me? You're in favor of slavery in 19th century America, or you're a Nazi? Or where's your white hood? You know what I'm saying? Just 5 days after George W. Bush was sworn in office, a memo from the counterterrorism expert Richard A. Clark to Rice included a year 2000 document, Strategy for Eliminating the Threat from the Jihadist Networks of Al-Qaeda, Status and Prospects. This document devotes over two of its 13 pages of material to specifically addressing strategies for securing Pakistan's cooperation and airstrikes against al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. So there you go right there. That shoots holes on whatever she's been saying the last day and a half to 2 days. And also you go on to talk about the Pakistan obstacle. The document that Richard Clark handed over to Rice from the Clinton administration includes three levers that the United States had started applying to Pakistan as far back as 1980. Sanctions, political and economic methods of persuasion are all offered as having been somewhat successful. And let's see, other portions of the passages relating to Pakistan marked as operational details have been eradicated from the declassified memo at the CIA's request, blah, blah, blah. So Clark also made clear that the Clinton administration recognized the problem that Pakistan posed in mounting a more sweeping campaign against bin Laden. The report quotes overt action against bin Laden, who is a hero, especially in the Pashtun ethnic border areas near Afghanistan. Clark speculated in late 2000 would be so unpopular as to threaten Musharraf's government. The plan notes that after the attack on the USS Cole, Pakistan had forbidden the United States from again violating its airspace to attack bin Laden in Afghanistan. So, interesting. Very interesting. This stuff is all starting to creep out, and it's eye-opening, I think. And, of course, Monday from the Slate.com online news magazine, how Bush wrecked the army. The general's revolt has spread inside the Pentagon, and the point of the spear is one of Donald Rumsfeld's most favored officers, General Peter J. Schumacher of the Army Chief of Staff. The trumpet sound last month when Schumacher refused to give Rumsfeld a detailed army budget proposal for fiscal year 2008. Schumacher, in an unprecedented move, said he preferred not to submit a budget. Rumsfeld had limited the Army's budget for 2008 to $114 billion. Schumacher told him that the sum wasn't enough to maintain the Army's present commitments, simply to repair the tanks, radios, and other equipment damaged in Afghanistan and Iraq. He would need at least another $17 billion. If he didn't get it, he said there would be no point drawing up a budget at all. A month later, government executive a magazine called Government Executive reported that Shoemaker had told a group of congressional staffers about the grave backlogs at the Army repair depots. We talked about this about 2 months ago. Nearly 1,500 Humvees, M2 Bradley fighting vehicles, and other vehicles were awaiting repair at the Red River Army Depot in Texas. The same was true of 500 M1 tanks at the Anniston Depot in Alabama. None of the Army's five largest depots was operating at more than 50% capacity, all because of a shortage of money. That's not just repair depots that were overlooked. Friday's New York Times reported that the Army is so bogged down in Iraq and Afghanistan that just two or three active-duty combat brigades, 7,000 to 10,000 soldiers, are fully ready to deal with a crisis that might erupt elsewhere in the world. Wow. So, I mean, that's really eye-opening there. I mean, it's amazing. We reported this a long time ago, that the stuff is breaking down. And, of course, there's no money allocated to repair the stuff. You know, it's going to come, the bill's going to come due after the election, of course. And then we had this, I found, a question about waterboarding. Is waterboarding torture? But is it torture only when other countries are doing it? I found this. It says, interestingly, the United States has long since answered that question. Following the end of the Second World War, we prosecuted a number of Japanese military and civilian officials for war crimes, including the torture of captured Allied personnel. At one of those trials, United States versus Sawada, here's how Captain Chase Nielsen, a crew member of the 1942 Doolittle raid on Japan, described his treatment when he was captured and later tried for alleged war crimes by a Japanese military commission. He says, what other physical treatment was administered to you at the time? The answer was, well, it's given what they call the water cure. They asked him, explain to the commission what that was. He says, well, I was put on my back on the floor with my arms and legs stretched out, one guard holding each limb. The towel was wrapped around my face and put across my face, and water was poured on. They poured water on this towel until I was almost unconscious from strangulation. Then they would let me up until I'd get my breath. Then they'd start all over again. Another question was, what was your sensation when they were pouring the water on the towel? What did you physically feel? He answered, well, I felt more or less like I was drowning, just gasping between life and death. At the end of the Tokyo War Crimes Trial, the International Military Tribunal for the Far East, of which the United States was a leading member of, the tribunal was established by Douglas MacArthur, convicted former Japanese Prime Minister Chojo and numerous other generals and admirals of a panoply of war crimes. Among them was torture. One of the findings was the practice of torturing prisoners of war and civilian internees. Internees prevailed at practically all places occupied by Japanese troops, both in occupied territories and in Japan. The Japanese indulged in this practice during the entire period of the Pacific War. Methods of torture were employed in all areas so uniformly as to indicate policy both in training and execution. Among these tortures were the water treatment. So there you go. So here we go. We went after the Japanese for using waterboarding, and now we're expected to turn the other cheek now that we're doing it. So anyway, I think Michael J.B. Stickens is on, so we'll bring him on with a musical interlude. Michael, you there, sir? Fine, just taking a sip of my celebratory caffeine-free Diet Coke. You know, we're in our third season premiere here.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I hope the third year is the best one yet.
Oh, I hope so. Your lips to God's ears. I hate to invoke religion, but what the hell, the Republicans do it. It's done them well. I might as well start invoking religion. Praise the Lord, right? Hallelujah.
That's all you can do. Anyway, I'm honored to be on your show.
Oh.
It's a great show. I hope your listeners really like it.
Well, thank you. Yes, I like to think so. Yes. So anyway, I was just going through the sound of you. If you're listening about this, the Japanese had a war crimes thing against the Japanese for using the waterboarding and how they were convicted of torture with waterboarding. And I was saying how when they do it, it's a war crime, it's torture. But when we do it, it's nothing. You know.
No, when we do it, it's authorized by the president.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or shall I say, when you do it. I really don't want any part of this, and I'd rather not claim that I'm in any way American here.
No, I don't do it either. It's him, his administration, but it reflects on everybody. Actually, what he does reflects on the whole free world. I hate to say that, but it's true, you know?
Well, you know, I really think it does. And, yeah. And you know, over the course of my being on your show, you know, I've been to England back in May, and you know, it is amazing how everyone over there essentially tars the entire country with Bush's crimes. I know better. I've lived in the U.S. I went to high school there. I went to college there. I mean, I was just in Pittsburgh over the weekend.
Oh.
It's a great country.
Yeah.
But when the President of the United States pushes legislation through Congress essentially justifying torture, how what is one to make of that?
Yeah, and then they got the support. I'm reading here on Yahoo News that the White House is barring this hurricane report. I mean, it says the Bush administration has blocked release of a report that suggests global warming is contributing to the frequency and strength of hurricanes. I mean, I don't know what they're hiding that for. Are they worried about Gore getting up and say he's been right? Are they that concerned about that?
I don't think you and I have talked about global warming. I mean, I write about it fairly often at The Reaction, but. It's scary.
Yeah.
And I think it's far more serious. The reading I'm not a meteorologist, I'm not an environmentalist necessarily in a scientific sense, but I mean all the reading I've done suggests that you know we could very well be past the tipping point already.
Yeah. Actually,
that major climate change may be coming, and it seems to me that you know more and more I think we need to refer to this president as the ostrich president. I mean he sticks his head in the ground or he sticks it up his ass and would rather not know that any of this is going on.
Well, how about the thing about him referring to the Iraq war as a comma? Yeah, I mean that I'm surprised other people aren't seizing on this like I did with my special comment. I'm stealing Oberman's thunder here with a special comment. But I mean, referring to the whole thing as a comma, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It is.
Yeah.
He clearly lives in a bubble and is not terribly aware of what's going on outside of it.
Yeah. Now, what did you think of President Clinton on the Fox News Sunday? I thought he took it to Chris Wallace pretty well there. I think Wallace had to change his underwear when he was done, huh?
Well, I mean, I John Dickerson, who's one of my favorite political writers, writes for Slate, had good analysis today. Clinton knew what he was doing,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, Clinton is a seasoned politician, and he knew that this was his opportunity. I mean, he's essentially sending a message to all Democrats that now is the time to hit hard on this and not to back away. He's starting to do Hillary's dirty work, and I think we're going to see more of that over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting, right, that it wasn't so long ago that Hillary Clinton was referring to a vast right-wing conspiracy. And now you have Clinton going on Fox News talking about the right wing. The roles have been somewhat reversed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's right. I think he's absolutely right. I think it's about time Democrats got pissed off. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it. Democrats need to get pissed off about this.
Yeah, well, so I've said that for a while. I mean, the Democrats got to get off their asses and start, you know, fighting back against the Republicans. You know,
exactly. I mean, fair enough. You know, Clinton may not have done enough to combat global terrorism, but who did? I mean, who truly anticipated the extent or the damage that jihadism could inflict? I don't think anyone anticipated. Well, that may be going too far.
Mm.
Aside from a few experts or analysts who are familiar with what Osama was up to, I don't think anyone could have anticipated 9/11.
No. Well, when he said he did more than Bush did in those 8 months, I mean, Bush, he said Clinton tried to kill him several times. And even in that movie, The Path to 9/11, the Osama them made him look like he's the face of evil. You know, they're shooting up the wall with Clinton's image on it. I mean, that was pretty telling right there that they actually feared Clinton, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think that's right. Now, it's unfortunate that the last couple of years of Clinton's presidency were sidetracked by Monica. But mm-hmm. whose fault was that? I mean, I would say it's the Republicans' fault more than the Democrats' fault. I mean, it's not, you know, Clinton shouldn't have done what he did, perhaps, but I mean, the Republicans dragged this out for years.
True.
Dragged the investigation out, and you know, but as I wrote today, I mean, at least Clinton did something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he did something, and people like Richard Clark have made that same case. Clinton at least did something. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's about time Democrats hit back on terrorism. Republicans are not the party to turn to on terrorism. They want everyone to think that they are the party
mm-hmm.
that will make America safe. They are the party of national security, but in fact, they are not.
Yeah. Well, it's like you said, opening the program, you know, it's I gave all the time zones. It says in Republican Standard Time, it's always 9/11. You know,
always. was 9/11.
Absolutely. Exactly. And actually, the Shadow's asking, is this Keith Olbermann? No, I wish I could Keith Olbermann. I don't think I'd be able to get two words and have had Olbermann on.
he's great, though.
Oh.
He's emerging as one of the, you know, one of the essential voices in American politics.
Oh, yes. He's been really, did you watch the interview he did with Bill Clinton on Friday?
I've only seen bits and pieces.
You go on the countdown.msnbc.com. They have the full interview up there. It's excellent. He really, Oberyn's really doing a good job. And that interview was only done 10 minutes after the sandbagging he got done over at Fox News Sunday.
Yeah.
So, and it's
Oberyn's come a long way since ESPN.
Yeah. Now, and you know, this, you know, also Michael Stickney, so, you know, he writes for the blog One America Committee, which is John Edwards' blog, right, of which his wife just came out with a book as well.
Yes, and they're going to be on Oprah, I hear.
Oh, really?
Is it tomorrow or Thursday? I think they're going to be on Oprah.
Wow. Now
anyway,
everyone
tune in. Tune in to see John Edwards.
John Edwards, is he going to jump on the couch like Tom Cruise? I don't think so. But
He may make weird gestures with his thumb. I don't know if you remember that from the campaign.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know. He
somewhat awkward, but
well, everybody would be, he'll look a lot better because he had that mole removed from his upper
yeah,
lip. So,
yeah.
But you know, so and getting back to the Clinton business. Now, I think, you know what, with him going on Fox News, and it's been like he was on Fox News, he was on Olbermann, he was on Meet the Press, he was on Larry King. I think all this, you know, it can't help but propel Hillary even further up the ranks for the presidential race, huh?
Well, I think so. And a couple of weeks ago, I was filling in at a great blog called The Carpetbagger Report. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is that the proprietor of that blog was with a number of other liberal bloggers meeting for lunch with Clinton in New York. So we're talking about the people behind MyDD and America Blog and Daily Kos and some of the leading lights of the liberal blogosphere. And so Clinton is not just trying to engage the issue of national security. He is also trying to reach out to the liberal bloggers who in the past have not been terribly friendly to the Clintons, including Hillary. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is all part of a concerted campaign on the Clintons' part to, I mean, they're running already, aren't they? I mean,
absolutely.
There's no doubt both of them are running for 08, and Hillary's secret weapon, or not-so-secret weapon, is her husband. He's the master politician of our time. And, again, he knew exactly what he was doing with Chris Wallace. He knew that he was starting a fight. And you know what? If you watch the news reports, if you watch John Stewart juxtaposed this on his show last night wonderfully. You look at all the reports. It was all the Republican spin. It was all the talking points, right? Clinton mm-hmm. blew a gasket. Clinton is crazy. Clinton this, Clinton that. You know what? That's what we want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We want people talking about what Clinton said, because he was right.
Mm-hmm.
And he focuses attention on where the Republicans have gone wrong, on where Bush has gone wrong, on what wasn't done leading up to 9/11, and in a sense, what has not been done since. You know, so Clinton looked a little crazed, but he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's all part of a campaign for 08.
Well, it's like he said. He said that the conservatives, the right wing, has made Afghanistan 1/7 as important with Iraq. And like I've been saying, and we've been saying, well, Afghanistan, you know, at the beginning should have been more important in Iraq because that's where Osama bin Laden was. They should have, you know, gotten him, killed him or whatever, and taken care of that country. And then we had to go in Iraq, build the case for Iraq and go in there. And now both of the countries are going up in flames.
Sure. And now what you see is, you know, new reports coming out of Iraq that the country is teetering on the brink of chaos, although I can't imagine why there is not chaos there already. I mean, it seems chaotic to me. And you have Afghanistan, where NATO commanders realize how undermanned they are and are desperately seeking more NATO troops, and NATO countries are not necessarily stepping up. Canada sent 200 more troops and some tanks and some other equipment over there. As you may know, Canada's on the front lines in and around Kandahar fighting the Taliban, and you know, we're losing some of our own troops over there. Why isn't more of the attention there? Well, it's because it's Afghanistan, right? I mean, it's Iraq. It's become the quagmire. It's quicksand. It's America stepped in it, and
yeah.
Can't get out.
True.
Can't get out. I mean, how are they getting out?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. get out, it will get worse if they get out, but it's not going to get any better as long as they're there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a catch-22, and I just don't see what the solution is to it. And then you have the declassification of this intelligence report today, which essentially undermines everything Bush has been saying about the war on terrorism,
yeah.
Everything he's been saying about Iraq.
Yeah, how can Republicans stand on the terrorism as their strong suit when their support just blows holes in the whole damn thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, here are the leading experts of the American intelligence community, you know, essentially saying that Iraq has made terrorism worse.
Yeah,
that terrorism could start spreading beyond Iraq to other countries. That it has bred resentment towards the United States. All the things we knew, and then here it is in a report. And you know, all along Bush has been saying that Iraq has attracted terrorists, and is where that is in fact where we're fighting terrorism.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
No. Actually, I'm on your blog. And you write about you say Colonel Clark to tell it like it was. Clinton by no means was perfect. It was a perfect president. We all know that. And perhaps he could have done more, much more, to combat the rising tide of jihadist terrorism against the U.S. But he's right about this. He tried to do something long before terrorism was a priority. Bush, by contrast, did nothing during the months leading up to 9/11. Indeed, he did nothing until his hand was forced by 9/11. And he quickly turned away from Afghanistan, Pakistan, and in the pursuit of al-Qaeda to launch into fiasco in Iraq.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I just don't see any other way of looking at it. And Iraq has attracted so much American attention. You're talking about, I'm by no means am I a military expert. It's not just ground troops, though. It's not just equipment. It's satellite surveillance. It's unmanned drones. It's everything that should be used right now to be fighting the war on terror. In other words, the real war on terror.
Mm-hmm.
The war against those who do mean America harm. So much of that energy, the money, the resources, the manpower, all of it has been sunk into Iraq. And there's just not enough left over for where the fight should really be fought.
No, it's
right?
A mess.
And this is the great problem with, this is one of the great problems with Iraq.
Yeah, and Shadow is actually in the chat room, and he's saying he's trashing this hour, and he's saying that cherry picking the national intelligence estimate, LOL. I mean, how can you cherry pick an estimate that's totally negative on the whole Bush administration, huh?
And
Cheney cherry picking the intelligence against Iraq and then everything else, you know. Cheney has lied all the way along about this Iraq business. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you'll agree with me on this. I don't think these guys have much credibility left, if any at all.
Yeah.
You know, I think Cheney is doomed by his last throes comment. The insurgency is in its last throes.
Yeah.
And then it got worse.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know?
It is absolutely crazy, and the. You know, one of the stories today is that it's from that, I mentioned it in that post you were reading from, that Condi Rice came out and responded to Clinton's allegation that Bush didn't do anything leading up to 9/11, and she said that, in a sense, Clinton left them with no plan whatsoever to deal with al-Qaeda, with Pakistan, and so forth. And then Richard Clark responded once again and said, well, no, in fact, there was a plan. And the Raw story today has published a memo from Richard Clark saying there was in fact a plan to deal with Pakistan. There was a plan in place. The Bush team simply chose to ignore it, just like they ignored that briefing on how Al Qaeda was planning to use planes to blow up buildings.
Yeah, I mean, it's the report that he had, and he didn't read it or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And the Michael Moore focused on so heavily in Fahrenheit 9/11. Well, all we're getting now are reports of more and more memos, more and more information that Bush, in fact, the signs were there, the warning signs were there, they chose to ignore them.
Well, how about, I was talking about this last week, these the people who were put in charge of the reconstruction in Iraq, all these like basically political appointees, they had to go through a checklist that you worship to the picture of Bush, and you shine Cheney's shoes for 2 weekends, and you get to go off and run the Iraq's stock market and everything else, although you don't have a damn clue what you're doing over there, right?
Oh, yeah, well, it's the Michael Brown syndrome, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the hackocracy of the Bush administration, the appointing of hacks to some of the top positions, whether it's FEMA, whether it's or the reconstruction in Iraq. Doesn't matter what it is. Bush tends to appoint friends and donors and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole thing. I mean, and there's, what, $9 billion missing from the reconstruction in Iraq, and where's that money at?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. I mean, one day maybe we'll know what happened.
That's why I said we got the Democrats get back into the House, and we're going to have these hearings and investigations into this war, and we can get to the bottom of some of this stuff. You know, I mean,
because... Well, that's one of the reasons why I think it's extremely important for the Democrats to take control of at least one House. I mean, mm-hmm. I realize that the Senate may be a long shot at this point, but... At least the House, at least to start some of these investigations, because right now they really are powerless to do too much against the Republican majority. And I think it's essential. I think it's essential for Democrats to take over, not just because I think Democrats are better suited to run the war on terror or to find a way out of Iraq or to deal with poverty or global warming or any of the other crises of our time, but because I think Democrats will get to the truth, and I think it's about time this came out.
Well, you need investigations. Every major conflict we've had in our history, we've always had an investigation to go back over it and see how the conduct was. Same thing with Israel. I mean, they're already having hearings about their conduct during this war with Hezbollah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and don't we owe it to, don't Americans owe it to the thousands who have died, not just the thousands of Americans who have died, the thousands of, even greater thousands of Iraqis who have died. I think it's important to know that, you know, what exactly was behind that.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly happened? Why was this war fought? How was it fought?
Yeah.
I mean, the history will be written one day. I think we need to know sooner rather than later, though, because I think we need to hold certain people accountable.
Yeah.
And we need to elect certain people who can change the course that the United States is on right now.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we need these hearings. Like I said, when the Democrat I hope they have to take control of the House. In a way, we could, it'd be Bush's worst nightmare come true, because these last 2 years will be a living hell for him.
It could be. It could be, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. It could be. If Democrats could get their act together and unify, then I think it could be.
Yeah. Well, I think Clinton's gone a long way to unifying the Democrats now. I mean, if the different wings of the Democratic Party don't see this as a rallying cry, then they deserve to lose the midterms. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why he came out right now, because one of the reports I read recently is that the National Democratic Party was starting to focus on the economy. This election is not about the economy. Don't start, you know, it's not the economy, stupid, this time.
It's Iraq.
It's Iraq,
and
stupid.
Bush. Yeah, and Bush.
It's Katrina, stupid. It's Portgate, stupid. It's, you know, on and on and on. It's Bush's abuse of power, stupid. Mm-hmm. Don't focus on the economy. It just strikes me that the National Democratic Party is so out of touch at times with what's really going on, and I think it's going to take someone like Clinton to do what he did on Fox, to get out there and say, you know what, we've got to hit hard, and mm-hmm. we've got to do it now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's why if you see Hillary's campaign apparatus, she's brought in Terry McAuliffe, and he's heading up like a shadow Democratic National Committee, because I don't think they have confidence in Dean, because he always has that foot in his mouth disease.
Well, yeah, he does, and I think Hillary realizes that she will probably face a contender from the left, whoever that happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Gore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gore has a new book coming out next year. Remember that Gore supported Dean. Isn't it likely that Dean would
return the favor?
Support Gore?
Yeah.
So it's possible that Hillary and her people are looking ahead to, you know, a split in the Democratic Party through the primaries and trying to mobilize enough support outside of the normal DNC channels.
And
obviously McAuliffe. I mean, McAuliffe knows what he's doing. He's an excellent political.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine the money he's going to raise for her?
No, I mean it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, and Clinton, you know, and she's doing a great job. It's not just it's McAuliffe. It's circumventing the DNC. It's circumventing Dean. It's also bringing in someone like Peter Dow from Salon, who wrote the Dow Report, a very prominent blogger. It's again meeting with these high profile bloggers and trying to reach out to the base that way. You know, Hillary's positioning herself extremely well. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely impressed actually with pleased with how her campaign is being run so far.
Oh, yeah. She is doing real well. I mean, she's keeping herself pretty much steady as she goes. She's not getting pulled off into this battle with Clinton and Fox News, because her focus right now is on her reelection for Senate. It's like Clinton said, one election at a time. Then after this, then she'll decide. Some people are saying she probably won't announce until May or June at the earliest.
Yeah, and she doesn't need to, right? Mm-hmm. Because most presidential candidates don't get this kind of boost until the vice president shows up. I think, actually, I'm quoting John Dickerson there, too, to give some credit to him. Mm-hmm. But, it's usually the vice presidential candidate who's the attack dog, right? Hillary is married to her attack dog. And she can stay above the fray and focus on her Senate race and not sort of sully her hands with these debates with Fox News and so forth, and she can let Bill do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That attack dog should bite the GOP and give him rabies. What do you say about that, huh?
There you go.
They deserve it. It's amazing how little respected we are, and that whole thing. What do you think of the Hugo Chavez tripe? He said. I disagree with that completely. I mean, it's just, that was out of line.
It troubles me. And I position myself on the center left with respect to American politics. Mm-hmm. I'm proud to call myself a liberal. I'm proud to say that I support the Democratic Party. But it bothers me how Hugo Chavez has become a kind of cause celeb on the left. How so many like him because it's not by accident that he picked up a copy of Noam Chomsky's book. I mean, Chomsky for a long time has been attacking the United States from the left, and mm-hmm. I think ridiculously so. And I think it's shameful that some on the left actually like Hugo Chavez. I think he's a thug. He's a tyrant. There's no free speech in Venezuela. There's no free press in Venezuela. He essentially runs the country with an iron fist. And, just because he comes up here and criticizes Bush, first of all, I think it says something about the United Nations that some in the General Assembly even applauded him when he referred to Bush as the devil.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like George Bush, as you know, mm-hmm. but you know what? He's not the devil.
Correct. He really believes in his heart of hearts that he's doing right. I mean, and he won't listen to any opposing views. So yeah. I mean, it's just a disagreement over ideology. I mean, I just don't like, I don't agree with this war or lack
he's
of war.
Terrible, he's a terrible president. But yes. he's not the devil.
No.
And I think that Democrats like Charlie Rangel and others have come out and been highly critical of Hugo Chavez, and I think that's appropriate. I think if Bush is criticized by Americans or people like me who are not American but who love America, I think our criticism carries some weight. But for a foreign leader to come into this country and criticize the president is
actually a question from the chat room from the shadow. Ask him why Hugo Chavez sounds like a Democrat. He doesn't sound like a Democrat to me. I mean, it is a free country. I mean, what he said was awful. But I mean, it's still United States of America. I mean, you said he wouldn't have these freedoms in Venezuela or some corners of the world. But coming here, you're pretty much allowed to say whatever the hell's on your mind, even though it's insane and ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I would advise that commenter to go and have a look at what Chavez is actually doing in Venezuela before he compares him to a Democrat.
Yeah, it's
because he's a classic Latin American tyrant. He fashions himself as the latter-day Simon Bolivar, but he's going to run his country into the ground.
Yeah, as I said, I'm not Bush's biggest fan by a long shot. But I mean, I still, he is the president. When he's standing on that rubble after 9/11, he had such an opportunity, and he just blew it after that. When you look back, it's like, wow, what opportunity was lost? I mean, he could have united the country like never before. He could have kept it united. But, he got pulled by the neocons and we're more divided than ever before.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't necessarily think in his heart that he's a terrible man. I think he's been, I don't think he's terribly bright. I think he's been pulled in all sorts of different directions.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been a terrible president. I cannot imagine how he would not go down as one of the worst presidents in history. Certainly the worst two-term president in history. But at the same time, I will attack him or criticize him, on the merits of his policies and not necessarily, because I think he's the devil, for instance. I think that's just not necessary.
Yeah, just
and not coming from someone like Chavez.
Yeah, it's just a difference of policies and perspectives. I mean, that's a part of this country. I mean, you got some people who agree with Bush and the GOP, Limbaugh and the Sean Insanity listeners and the Limbaughs and all that. And you got some who disagree. And dissent is part of the best part of the United States, being able to have dissent.
Yeah, and I don't trust the Republicans. I don't like the Republicans. But the fact is there's going to be an election in...
that the American people decide.
In the right, near future, whatever it is, 42, 43 days. And... You know, we have a chance to make a change. Americans have a chance to vote in a party, I think, that deserves a chance to govern right now, especially in the House, hopefully in the Senate as well. Turnout is important. I think Democrats need to realize that Republicans are very good at turning out their base. Democrats need to do the same. Ultimately, though, it's a Democratic election.
Absolutely.
And at the end of it, if the Republicans stay in power, I will still criticize them. I will still write about them. I will still come on your show and talk about them. But you know what? I'll respect the fact that they won a Democratic election.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we'll let you go and end our segment with you.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
Thank you very much. We'll have you on in a few weeks.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm here.
Thank you very much.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And that was Michael J.W. Stickings from thereaction.blogspot.com. And we'll take our break for the second hour. Then we'll bring Jamie on to talk about the Stargate episodes. And we'll move quickly along to Dr. Nat Ranger, the mad rocket scientist, with a pop culture discussion. And then we'll end up with the Koenig Rules, the mad professor, with a discussion of Doctor Who and Battlestar Galactica. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, with all that's been going on in the Middle East, in the spirit of peace, the Capitol Steps have brought together Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Hezbollah leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah.
Our roadmap needs corrections for peace to come about.
Men never asked directions, so that is out.
Mind if I ask you, Ehud, what would you want from me?
It would be nice if we could not start World War III.
Well, our need for peace has grown, so let me throw out the last stone. Embrace me, my sweet, embraceable Jew.
Excuse me, is that some mace in your shoe?
It would be so sweet to talk about the West Bank.
If you say you'll meet me, I will send my best tank.
George Bush thinks our Mideast talk should be fair.
George Bush thinks the Mideast means Delaware.
Let's have a midnight meeting.
Oh, that would put a crimp in your new curfew.
Curfew? You can't put me under a curfew.
I put you under a curfew.
Radical extremist. May the fleas of 1,000 camels build a tiny little Walmart in your nose.
I got nothing.
There you go. At least we're talking. My sweet defaceable you.
But I do think, when I said some things in the first term, they're probably a little blunt. Bring It On was a little blunt. And I was really speaking to our troops, but it came out and it had a different connotation, a different meaning for others, and so I'll be more disciplined in how I say things.
The humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of the third season premiere of Subject to Discussion Live on LVRocks.com, as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you, everybody, joining us live and everybody in the chat room. And, of course, thank you for everybody listening to the podcast. This is Tuesday night on LVRocks.com. And everybody in the chat room is Anorexic Pillow, Chris1019. I hear Scully Girl's having a little problem with the number here. Hold on. Hold on. She was dialing Florida. We haven't moved to Florida yet, have we? Hold on here. And let me see. Who else is in the chat room? Giorgio, guest 274-25003. Invincor, Yellow Raptor, Net Ranger, Scully Girl, and myself. And so we thank everybody joining us for the third season premiere. I said the program began just as a 6-week little mini series, kind of like Battlestar. You know, I started before Battlestar, and then the first season started in January, so I predate Battlestar. And actually, when the first season started from Galactica in January, I went 12 weeks straight. The show was only an hour. The program was only an hour back then. We did the whole hour talking about Galactica, so it was interesting. And so anyway, I think Jamie's on the line, so we'll start Stargate review of the season finale, part half of the season, or whatever the hell they call it. Jamie, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi, you called Florida? You got a school?
Yeah, I called the wrong number twice.
What'd they say? We're subject to discussion. You should have told them about the program. I could pick up some more listeners.
Oh, it was a mess.
Oh, okay. So, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
So we're going to have you, Net Ranger, and Koenig on, so we'll move things along pretty quickly tonight. This is the third season premiere, so I'm trying to jam-pack it with all the favorite guests of the program. So,
okay.
So anyway, and of course, at the mid season finales of both of the programs, and of course, Stargate SG-1 opened with the Quest Part 1, which I thought was outstanding, huh?
Yeah,
it was excellent. I like when they do this medieval type of stuff or the mythical stuff. They, you know, they do the Merlin and all that stuff. I wish they do that all throughout the season instead of getting away from that. You know?
Yeah, and it's nice too, like that they had all the different riddles they had to figure out in that. I thought it was really good. I liked it.
Yeah, and they're looking for the Holy Grail, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for the Sangreal, and then actually Daniel comes up with whatever it is, the dialing code to get them there, right?
Yep.
And we went to this medieval village. And
they're told that other people have been there already, led the Jaffa, and they forgot Baal was there, so.
Yeah, he was there, and then they find this old guy who actually turns out to be Vala's daughter again. She's able to change her appearance, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a power she's had before?
I don't know. Maybe it has to do with her necklace.
Oh.
I don't know, but Daniel figured it out by what she said. That was something that was in the Book of Origin, I guess. So.
Oh, interesting. And then they go walking through the forest, wherever it is, and then they come across those people who are frozen because they were in the maze. They hit the wall and they got frozen or something, right?
Yeah, they're stuck in a time barrier that's time distortion field.
Yeah, no.
So they're going real slow compared to the real world.
Yeah, I thought that part was outstanding. How Samantha had to throw the rock and figure a way through the maze to get through that maze.
Yeah, since her machine, her little computer thingy.
Yeah.
Great word for it. Quit working.
And then excuse me. And then they get and then they find what's his name there, and then they walk in and they get locked into that shield thing with him.
Yeah.
Baal, right?
Yeah, because there was a treasure chest he opened that was obviously trapped.
Correct. And then Daniel and Vala, they open it empty, and then Daniel realizes they each have to sacrifice something to put into the treasure case to open to lower the shield, right?
Right. It's funny when Vala's trying to find
yeah.
decide what to sacrifice.
Anyway, yeah, she didn't want to give up that. She didn't want to give up that gun, did she?
No.
And then Invincor saying the bit where he had to put the stuff into the box was clever. Yeah, it had an Indiana Jones feel to it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And what else happened? Then they went to where'd they go?
They went to the cave
To the cave, mm-hmm. and that's when Daniel realizes that that old guy wasn't really the old guy because of the ring he was wearing.
Yeah, right? The one you put in the box, and that he said that stuff. So
yeah, and then they realized it was really her, and then they go into that cave, and then they begin the whole thing with the riddles and all that. I thought that was very, very clever as well.
Yeah, it actually reminded me a lot of one of the other Camelot episodes they had before. There were similar riddles they had to choose, and as usual, Vala wasn't much help, even though she thinks she is.
Yeah, because she came up with the words. Oh no, it's, you know, back then left was right and right was left or wherever it was. And I like how each of them came up with the solution to each one of the riddles. Kind of like Teal came up with one with the wind, and everybody came up with their own answers. You know,
because
I liked it because they were all included. Because I thought, oh, this is gonna be a Daniel episode or a Daniel Vala episode. Really, they all had a pretty good role in it, especially Samantha with the maze thing. She, you know, she figured that out.
Yeah, they needed the whole team.
Yeah, which is nice. Oh, except for, what's his name? Landry. He really wasn't in it very much, but he was in Atlantis a lot.
Yeah, he was in Atlantis more than Stargate.
Yeah. And then that little boy shows up, and they go running after the boy, and they kind of knew it was a trap, right?
Yeah, but Daniel thought that it was one of the tests that they had to show kindness by helping him, because they already did charity by giving something up and... what was the other one? The first one they did, prudence. Instead of being reckless, going through the maze.
Yeah, then they had to show faith by him walking through the fire. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, I figured that was coming. I'm like, walk through it already.
And then they get to the precipice there, and then him and her go over there, and they I guess he said he wasn't true of faith after all because he wasn't able to pick up the thing there, huh?
Well, I don't know, unless that's one of the last tests, but that was where he realized, too, that she didn't have any powers.
Yeah.
And then they hear something, and Val's like, we agreed there's no such thing as a dragon, right?
Yeah, and it's a flying dragon. Yeah. That was a cool way to leave it, with the thing spitting the fire at them at the end, huh?
Yeah.
That was outstanding. So on a 1 to 10, how would you rate the quest, part 1?
An 8.5, I guess.
Really?
I really enjoyed it. Ooh. I think probably I'd say Daniel I enjoyed the most in it. I don't know. I mean, even though the other ones helped, I think he still mostly was the one.
Yeah.
He's used to figuring out the clues and that. So.
Yeah. And then we move on to Atlantis. I had the return part 1, and I thought that was very good as well.
Yeah, it was good too.
But you don't like it. We've established before, you don't like it when they spend all their time in space, right?
some of it. Atlantis is different, but yeah, I like it better when they're on the ground. But yeah. But this one was really good. I did enjoy this one. It had more going on.
Yeah, did the first test of the McKay-Carter intergalactic gate bridge and everything, and Shepard went back to Earth, saw Landry and what's his name, Jack. We're there, and I like how Jack is saying, "Oh, he's late and all that." And then Landry, so you're just jealous because you want to do this.
Yeah, because he didn't get to go on the trip.
Yeah. And what else happens at?
They find that somebody went through with them that's going, like, really fast. They can't see them, so they have to slow down to find out what it is.
Yeah, it turns out it's the Ancients.
Or speed up, I'm sorry. They have to speed up to see what it is.
And it's the Ancients, and they're coming back. And the one captain, what's her name, Helia, and she asked for help, yada, yada, yada. So they ended up taking them back to Atlantis, right?
Mm-hmm. And then she tells them that... she wants to talk to basically the president because she doesn't need them now. She's running the city. So.
Yeah, and then they're all shocked because this thing rises up out of the floor. I like how McKay says, how come I never saw this before?
Yeah.
You know, and I like that part when he was all excited about meeting an ancient, and Shepard says, why don't you go make yourself a list and come back or something like that, you know, to get rid of him. You know? And what else happens after that? Oh, they all pack up and leave. I thought it was kind of sad. It was like a Star Trek type of. They're all leaving and they've been decommissioned and everything. It was kind of to me, it kind of harkened back to Star Trek. You know, they're all leaving and, you know, blah, blah. And they end. Now, see, another thing reminds me of Star Trek, they all break regulations. They all steal one of those the ships and they go back.
Yeah, they always do that, though.
Yeah,
I know one of the things is, like, that Woolsey's going to stay there as the ambassador liaison between the two people.
And then, Jack is over there as well, and they end it with them two being attacked, or it looks like they were attacked, right?
Yeah, well, at first, when the replicators came, they Ancients thought that they could control it because they would listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But since the Stargate team had rewritten the program... they didn't listen anymore, so yeah, they start attacking Atlantis. So they decide to steal the puddle jumper and go through anyway rather than sending a nuke.
Yeah, because Landry wanted to dispatch the Daedalus with a nuclear bomb to destroy Atlantis.
Yeah.
Because with that gate bridge, it'd lead them right to Earth, you know.
Yeah.
So now I missed the last scene because the VCR conked out. So what was the last scene?
Okay. Well, the main last scene is them trying to get there anyway when they steal the ship, like you said. And Landry comes on the communication, is like telling him, "You better come back."
Mm-hmm.
Basically tells John that he's going to fire him, but he hangs up on him, so he doesn't have to listen. And they come back to where Taylor and Ronan are, who've been approached by the Genii that want their help.
Yeah, I saw that part when I went to pick them up. And then what happened after that? Because I think it conked out right then.
Basically, just a team came in and found Taylor and Ronan and told them what was going on, and they agreed to help them. So they go in the ship and they dial the gate for Atlantis, and it shows the Atlantis replicators trying to shut the gate, or trying to put the shield up on the gate, but they can't.
Huh.
And then that to be continued, of course.
Wow. So MVP from The Return, part one?
I don't know. I guess probably McKay. I thought they were all did good.
Yeah.
I liked the turtle soup comment, too. That was one of the things I remember.
I like the comment about the pizza that Shepard says.
Oh, yeah,
and he says, is it true what you said about the pizza? Because I really like to get some. okay, later.
Yep.
So it was a pretty good episode, I have to say.
Yeah, and this time I liked SG-1 better, though, I think.
Yeah, because they brought back a lot of mythology and everything else that really made it feel a little different than the other, the previous episodes,
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they had the ratings from Company of Thieves and Phantoms from ratings SG-1 Atlantis held steady. September 15th, Company of Thieves did a 1.5 rating, and then Phantoms did a 1.6 for Atlantis. So Atlantis is improving on the audience from SG-1. That's kind of a surprise. And then Eureka did a 2.1 rating on Tuesday, and Dead Like Me did a 1.1, and ECW Wrestling actually dropped a little bit. It did a 1.8 rating. So, interesting. So, now, did you watch the first episode, before we really go, did you watch the first episode of Heroes?
Yes.
What did you think?
I really liked it. I think it could have used with a longer pilot. I know they were saying in the chat that there was one at the convention, but they need to air it on TV.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It did move pretty fast, though. I thought, wow, this is a fast-moving 1 hour here. Holy cow.
Definitely was good. And there was a live blog on after the show.
Oh.
Even though I went to it, I couldn't figure out, no one helped when I wrote, how to actually enter in your own questions. But I did get to view the questions. And they told, it's on the website now on NBC, it tells some of the interesting things. It talks about the X-Men comparison and about how they're planning it out as a series and that they already have, like, more than one season kind of planned out.
Yeah. Well, that's good. They have an arc all set up and everything. And I like how the music was very good. And it did have a feel, Con was saying, it did have a feel of the 4400, a overarching story and everything, with all of them finally going to start to getting together next week,
Yeah, and I'm taking it that a lot of it has to do with them, I guess, the end of the world or something to affect and them stopping it.
Correct. So, well, Jamie, we'll let you go.
Okay.
Thank you for being on for the third season premiere.
You're
very good. We'll have you on. We'll rotate you and Koenig around a little bit when we talk about Galactica and the rest of the sci-fi.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Jamie with our review of the Stargate season mid-season finales. Both of them are excellent. I just like I agree with Jamie. The SG-1 season mid-season finale was slightly better than the Atlantis one. But and again, of course, don't forget next week again is the Star Trek auction on Sotheby's. Christie's is going to auction off a whole lot of Star Trek thing. Again, Captain Picard's jumper is going to go for between $6,000 and $8,000. Wow! And then the flute. The iconic flute that Picard used in 1992's Inner Light episode is going to go between. Oh, they don't have a price there for. Oh, between $800 and $1,200 for that thing. Wow! Incredible. So, interesting. And so, let's see what happens. And we'll do a little pop culture discussion with the mad rocket scientist, Dr. Danette Ranger, in just a moment, and talk about Heroes. I enjoyed Heroes. I said it did have a similar feel to it as what do you call it, the 4400, but I thought it was very well. And I'm in the life section of USA Today, and they have the premieres. Tonight is, of course, Ted Danson. I think he's hilarious. He's going to be in the Help Me Help You show. I think that should be good. Every show he's been in has been outstanding. He did, of course, Cheers. I didn't really care for Cheers too much, you know what I mean? But I liked him in Becker. And in this Help Me Help You, to me, has a feeling of the old, I'm showing my age, of the old Newhart show, Bob Newhart show. Did a show years ago that was set in Chicago. And he played a psychiatrist, and he always had these, you know, not every week, every episode, but every two or three weeks he had a group session with a lot of his, you know, lunatic patients. It's a professional word, I guess. And it was always funny, the repartee between him and the lunatics, and always felt like Newhart's kind of like the lead lunatic of the group. So I thought that'd be funny. And then in the life section, let's see, Gilmore Girls having its season premiere. They're expecting this to be the final season premiere for the Gilmore Girls. And again, the book by Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of Senator John Edwards, is called Saving Graces. She doesn't talk about her survival too much of from breast cancer, but rather she talks about her surviving the death of her son, Wade, in 1996. Those of you who recall, their son was 16, and he was going away on his way to his family's beach house when the wind did hyperplane, and it flipped his car over and ended up killing him. So it was in a freak accident. And also, I say John Edwards always wears that little ring on his lapel pin. That's a reminder of his son, Wade. So I think with that, we'll be joined by Dr. Net Ranger, the mad rocket scientist, with a pop culture discussion. Ah, Dr. Net Ranger, are you there, sir?
Yeah, John, how's it going?
Ah, very good. How are you?
Oh, great. And congratulations on the 2 years.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. This is the third season premiere. Yes. Edward James Olmos is in the wing, so we may not be able to get to him tonight.
Well, you can cut me off if you need to.
We'll see. I've been stepped by sci-fi too many times. We'll see. I'm dedicating this hour to my loyal guests, so you and KR and Jamie, so to hell with the cast members, you know what I'm saying?
Good to be.
Yeah, and actually Scully was talking about Becker and everything else. I was mentioning how tonight's the series premiere of Help Me Help You with Ted Danson.
Right.
So that should be a pretty good show. And we want to talk about you watched Heroes. What did you think of Heroes last night?
I thought it was pretty good. I'd actually seen the pilot earlier in the summer, but it was actually pretty surprising the number of viewers they had. NBC was really happy about that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Let me see. How they you said in your little talking points that did how many viewers did they get?
Well, the early numbers said just over 16 million.
Wow, that's incredible for a network program, especially a show like that, to get that many viewers, you know?
Right, right. And that's the biggest premiere in that time slot.
So wow.
2001.
Huh.
So you got to remember, back in 2001, NBC was duking it out for first place with ABC. So it's a big deal for them. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And now, depending on your time zone, of course, if you're in the Republican standard time, it's always 9/11. But here, the rerunning the premiere of Heroes tonight, and I guess Sci-Fi is going to re-air it also on Friday.
Right.
Yeah. So that's outstanding. Good for them. Yeah. Let's hope the viewership stays up. So let's hope so. You know what I'm saying? And then now,
another interesting thing about the viewership on Heroes. Mm-hmm. Actually went up in the second hour. If you'll remember, we talked about the biggest premiere of the season so far was Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, also on NBC. But during the second half hour, that dropped. Heroes actually picked up viewers in the second half hour. So people must have realized that it was on and they wanted to tune over. So that's another good sign.
Incredible. And then you also say Brothers and Sisters did quite well as well, huh?
Right, but Brothers and Sisters, you also have to remember, has Desperate Housewives as a lead-in.
Mm-hmm.
So it did a little bit better than Heroes, but with a huge lead-in like that, Heroes essentially doesn't have a lead-in. It's local TV in most markets.
Mm. Very
so
good.
It's the first hour of the network.
Yeah. Well, and then Runaway, they said you have here a struggle with just over 2 million viewers. Well, that might be on the life support there, huh?
Right. That must be a little bit of a shock to the CW network. That's the only new show they've picked up this year with the merge between UPN and the WB and bringing those shows over. But that show just did not make it. The 2 million viewers, that's pretty low for for even the UPN for some of the stuff they had on there last year. So that's got to be a real disappointment. So yeah. If that keeps up, you know, give that 2 or 3 weeks of that, and they'll be looking to replace it.
Huh. Unbelievable. And
they're probably wishing they had taken the Aquaman pilot, which is kind of the Smallville spinoff that they talked about, or even Everwood was one of the shows that was talked about that was dropped.
Huh.
And also the numbers are way down for Seventh Heaven, which is
really
WB's big show. They're down to just over 4 million, which is down about 3 million from what they had at last year's opening.
Wow. Well, I mean, everybody thought they said last season was the last season, and a couple of the stars aren't back, right? The one kid, he's not back, and the other one, the one of the girls, they're not back either, right?
Right.
So it's a kind of
contract issues or something after, or they already made other commitments after they thought it was going to be canceled, so they just didn't come back.
Yeah. How long has that show been on?
I think this is the 11th.
Oh, my God. I'm sick of that show. They should take it off the air and bring on something. 11 years, that's long for any show to be on, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Except for Battlestar.
Yeah.
And what else? Grey's Anatomy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other news this week, we actually have the first two shows that look like they're
canceled.
Headed for cancellation.
Uh-oh. Which two?
Happy Hour and Justice over on Fox. They're both officially on hiatus. It's kind of hard to tell, though, with Fox, because everything goes on hiatus anyway in October.
Oh, for baseball. Well,
but they actually took them off early. And
really?
For Happy Hour, they're going to do the Brad Garrett Till Death. They're going to do repeats of that.
Oh.
And in the Justice time slot, they're going to replay House
for
the times until baseball.
Really, now? Because, well, Justice was with that guy from Alias, right? The father?
Yeah. Right, and it also has Kerr Smith. He's one of the young actors. He was in the E-Ring last year and Dawson's Creek before that.
Oh.
But he's kind of promoted as one of the stars. But that show kind of is struggling also. It's been going down. Both of those shows have actually dropped, I guess, about 30% from the opening week numbers. So they have all the hype, and they get a really good number to start out with, and then they've dropped down 30% in the second and third episodes.
Interesting. And I know Grey's Anatomy did well. It gave delivered CSI its lowest rating in years.
That's right. CSI actually won. Or I'm sorry, Grey's Anatomy actually won the week.
Hmm.
And over, I think it was just over 25 million viewers. So that's pretty big.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, we all, you know, oh, Galactica does real well, or Doctor Who, they do 2 million viewers. It's nothing compared to these networks, you know?
Right.
You know? I mean, it's...
And another show that we've talked about is Six Degrees, which aired right after the Grey's Anatomy lead-in, and lost more than 50% of the audience.
That show's done for.
Yeah, I give that a few weeks. It's actually kind of had a resurgence in the hype on the net. People have started saying, "Oh, this was great. This is going to be a wonderful show." But the ratings didn't really bear that out. So we'll have to see.
No, you stick a fork into Six Degrees, it'd be 98.6 because that's about room temperature when it's dead, right?
Right. Yeah. Big opening last week.
The two shows I'm interested. Well, Jericho's one. I watched it. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I went back and forth on it if it was going to be good or not. As I was watching, I was like, it looks kind of boring. Then I was like, well, it's interesting. And then I was like, well, are they going to take 2 or 3 weeks to show the bomb dropping, or what are they going to do?
Yeah.
And the other show is, Prison Break and Vanished is doing?
Vanished, yeah.
Because I like those two shows.
Really? Yeah,
I like those both a lot also. They're both doing fairly well. Prison Break, I think, is averaging around 6 or 7 million viewers, and Vanished is a little bit lower. But right now they're pretty safe on Fox, I think.
Yeah. Well, because a lot of people are concerned because, Prison Break, well, it broke out of prison, so I don't know what the name of the show is still called, Prison Break. But anyway, and now they're on the run, right?
Right.
And, well, this show's real popular because the two leads are real popular with the girls and, some of the guys and all that. What's his name's real popular because of the tattoo. And the other one was popular from John Doe.
Right.
Yeah, would you say this is like the men's version of Desperate Housewives?
I've never heard it called that, but that's a good...
Yeah,
good
you're probably right. It's like Raw. It
is.
Like WWE
you've got 5, 6 supposedly attractive men. It's the same as Desperate Housewives.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know if the show is geared towards women.
Yeah. Do you have any breakdown of it? More women?
Maybe more
women?
Gays watch it? I don't know.
Probably. No, do you have any breakdowns of the audience?
I actually didn't pull those this week.
Oh, it's okay. We get it for next week. But yeah, sure. I would imagine. Well, Jericho, yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't this. Yeah, I don't know. Some reason I had a thinking it was going to be more, a little bit of more sci-fi than it was. It was more story-driven than anything else, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of like a sci-fi backdrop or background.
Yeah, like 4400. It had a feel like the 4400.
But it's kind of funny. My wife, who I kind of use as a litmus test or something, Battlestar Galactica is the only sci-fi related show that she likes and watches, and she actually really enjoyed Jericho. So.
Yeah. Well, they did 13 million viewers. They say CBS was pleased with the numbers. So hopefully the second week. When's Jericho on? Thursdays, right?
Wednesday.
Tomorrow. So now hopefully they won't lose too much viewership because they're up against Dancing with the Stars, right?
They,
aren't they on the same time with Jericho?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So
America's Next Top Model.
America's.
Now, this week in the premiere, they actually took some audience away from Bones over on Fox, which that was kind of a surprise to people as well. That's David Boreanaz's show.
I'm sick of him too. He did that wherever the hell that show was. I'm sick of him. Same thing that, you know, I really tried. I thought I'll do a Media Boulevard a favor, which, you know, you go on MediaBoulevard.com and the magazine. All the outstanding this week, you have what are you talking about this week? Jericho, right?
Yeah, we had Sprague Graydon. Yeah,
exactly.
On the Stars.
And then I sat down. I said, "You know what? I don't like what's his name. I'm gonna watch Studio 60, whatever the hell it was. That show was horrible."
Yeah, the second episode was bad too.
Oh, it was horrendous. I said, "I don't like that Bradley Whitford because I didn't like him from West Wing because his ego is about the size of the MGM." And then what's his name? I can barely stand him. The other guy. What the hell's his name? The
Matthew
guy.
Perry.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like a warmed over Saturday Night Live, huh?
Right. And it's still doing fairly well in the
really?
Ratings. But we'll have to see how that goes over the next few weeks.
Huh.
How that evolves.
Yeah. And what else? Supernatural, of course, is coming back.
Supernatural and Smallville. That block starts this week. So that'll be actually another really good test to see how the CW does. It'll be interesting to see if there's actually a problem with this merger, or if they can retain the audience that they had for Supernatural and Smallville.
Well, I mean, Smallville's been on for years, too. That show's, you know, probably on its last legs as well. I can imagine how much longer they're going to carry this, you know, thing on because, you know, the kid's still in high school. Is he still in high school?
No, they're out of high school now. But actually, I don't know if you're right about that or not. They actually were saying that last year, that it was going to be the last year.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, it started pulling in the highest ratings of it started beating Seventh Heaven.
Really?
And they actually, something that's kind of unique that they did, they actually tailored the Superman movie that was released last summer, and actually the comic books as well, kind of adopted some of the backstory of Smallville rather than the other way around.
Interesting.
For the history and different, just different characters. But
really? Now, how much longer can I keep him as Clark until he's got to put on the Superman costume? How old is he? He's getting like 30 years old. About time to put on the Superman costume. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's actually a lawsuit involved in that. The creators of Superman also created Superboy, and if he ever puts the costume on, there's a big potential lawsuit. So I don't think they'll ever put the costume on him. But who knows? They might resolve that. That'd be a good ending for the show.
Yeah. Or should Batman come on and beat the living hell out of him. End of the episode with the kryptonite ring. But anyway, and then Ugly Betty, that's supposed to be a much tally-hooed episode, series. It's like a telenovela, right?
Right.
And then, of course, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that one, I just can't really get too interested in that concept. But,
no. And then, of course, we'll have Koenig Rules on to talk about Doctor Who, Christmas in Whoville. That should be pretty good. And what else? I'm going down the notes here. He said NBC Universal is going after hosters of the webisodes of Battlestar Galactica, and they forced YouTube to take him down, huh?
Right.
There
was some talk last week that was probably going to start happening, but they actually did it yesterday. If you go to YouTube now, there are no more webisodes on there. And I don't know about all the sites, but they sent out to at least several of the fan sites that had them rehosted. They sent out the Nastygram letter today. We actually got ours today. But we actually had them. We were just relinking YouTube, so all we had to say is say that, so it wasn't a problem. But some of the other sites, from what I hear, got the nasty letters. But it's kind of kind of common.
That's nice.
They really want to keep the audience to the U.S. right now because it's really between season two and season three.
Yeah.
They don't want to confuse people.
Yeah, I you can understand. At least you got some kind of response in NBC Universal. Hell, we should put that up on the S2DRadio.com website. At least you get some kind of response from the network versus completely being ignored. Hello. You know?
That's actually kind of funny. At the very bottom of every legal letter like that they get, it used to be a thing that websites would publish a letter and there would be a huge backlash against either the star or the show. And so it always says, at the bottom, they copyright the cease and desist letter and warn you that if you publish this, you will be, you know, they'll go after you for copyright.
So. Holy Christopher, are you kidding me? And then what else? Oprah's lawyers go after the webmaster for the... Oh, yeah, I saw that today. Actually, she said that the lawyers got a little out of hand and all it would take would be a phone call, you know. So she called off the dogs of the lawyers against this poor guy for putting up the Oprah for President site, right?
Right, right.
And then the girls
called...
Sorry?
Sure. It's a big week for lawyers.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's been just so many news stories this week, and you don't usually hear that. But
now, where's Ben Matlock when you need him? You know what I'm saying? Where's
exactly.
Andy Griffith? And what about the, speaking of lawyers, what about the, what's his name, Francis, the CEO of Girls Gone Wild, pleads guilty, failing to document the ages of the girls.
Right.
That
right.
is only a matter of time.
They might have to cut your subscription off there, Sean.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, I guess he got a $350,000 fine. He pled guilty to a, I'm not sure exactly what the charge was, but basically they, in anything that's considered even softcore porn, they have to maintain records of all the performers, and they haven't been doing that. So,
well, they said now he might go to Europe and shoot the videos over there because they're less stringent with the laws over there about public nudity and all that.
Right.
So maybe go over there. Actually, he was involved in something here in Vegas a few years ago at the MGM. He was involved with an incident over at the Sea Blue restaurant. Some guy, Jeff Beecher, he jumped into the aquarium, a huge aquarium in front of this restaurant called the Sea Blue, and it is a publicity stunt. He was running Beecher's Madhouse over at the Hard Rock, and somehow the MGM security got him mixed up with Joe Francis from the Girls Gone Wild, and they roughed up Francis, and then Francis threatened to sue the MGM over being harassed by security,
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, and he had nothing to do with this jumping in the aquarium. It was Beecher. I don't know how, Beecher's like 400 pounds. Excuse me. And Francis is like, what? He's a skinny little guy. I don't know how they could get those two mixed up, but they did. And I don't know. They just thought that, he's the one to do it because he does all the Girls Gone Wild videos or whatever. And then he ended up, I think he did sue the MGM, and they settled out of court for that. So, it's a little Vegas connection to the story there. And also, our favorite blonde, Paris Hilton, was arraigned on this week on her DUI charge, right?
Right, right.
Mm.
Yeah, that's another another one that I kind of wish would go away. But she keeps coming back. But yeah, she, drunk driving, I think September 7th was the date she was arrested, and she just had her arraignment today, so.
Yeah, now she... She said she was going to go get some In-N-Out, right?
Right.
I'm not talking about In-N-Out sex. I'm talking about the burger, right? She's like,
I don't know. I just heard the In-N-Out. I'm not sure what she
Yeah, that's what she refers to it. She also refers to it as sex. They refer to it as In-N-Out. And then she was going to get some meat, right? Get some a special sauce from In-N-Out burger. Anyway, did she get a double-double or did she get animal style? What do you think? She deserves all the jokes that come her way. I'm sorry, she deserves it. how could she be a member of the Hilton family is beyond me. You know what I'm saying? And the parents are gotta be among the worst parents ever walking this earth.
Well, I think a lot of hers is an act. I mean,
yeah, she plays the ditz well.
She plays the ditzy blonde well.
Yeah, she can't be. She cashes in on that. And what about Clooney running for office? Oh, not another celebrity.
Well, that's a story that. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it's kind of getting a lot of buzz right now. It might be wishful thinking. Everybody wishes their favorite celebrity or whatever would run for something. But he's somewhat of an activist. He's kind of seen as a political activist and made fun of in all the talk shows and South Park and everything. But what this comes from is he did an appearance at a signing that Schwarzenegger did last week.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of the reporters were asking him if he's going to run for office, and he said no, but just the way he said no, everybody's saying, well, he's talking like a politician already. So,
well,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope not, but who knows. And then at the movies, of course, Jackass number two did number one, $29 million.
Box what an embarrassment.
Horrible. I'm going to go see that movie that Sean Penn's in, All the King's Men. Is that what it is? Yes.
Yeah, that opened too. Jackass was about three times higher. I think the next nearest competitor was Fearless, the Jet Li martial arts movie.
Mm. Terrible.
And that made $11 million, so Jackass made three times that.
Wow.
Well, even though Jackass, you know, $28 million is not high for number one, that's the first, I think, number one to reach over $17 million since the beginning of August.
Wow.
End of August. Because August and September are the slow months.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh.
The last 2 weeks, the number one movie have opened up at about $13 million.
Huh. I'd go to say probably the last month or 5 weeks, number one's been about $15, $16,
$17
million.
Yeah.
Wow. And the Flyboys did $6 million. I really don't have any feelings to go see that, but I see that Sean Penn movie. It's supposed to be excellent. About New Orleans, New Louisiana politics, supposed to be outstanding, you know? Especially, yeah. They got the guy from The Sopranos in there, too. What the hell's his name? He's in that movie with Sean Penn. And actually, it was directed by, or produced, directed, whatever it is, by James Carville from the Clinton deal. Right?
Yeah, that looks like a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right about Carville.
Yeah, and also this week he said Kevin Costner and Ashton Kutcher in The Guardian. That looks like it's going to be a good movie as well.
Yeah, it does. I haven't really seen that much hype for that movie, but it's a group of Coast Guard members, and the guy's entire team gets killed, and he's basically rebuilding his team. That's Costner's character.
Yeah, and an open season. It's the CGI animation kid. Now, is that the one with the baseball talking to the kid and the bat talking to the kid and all that? Is that movie?
No, this one is Animals. It's Animals.
Whatever, I get them all mixed up.
So I'm sure I'll see that when I've got a 3-year-old or 4-year-old now, actually. So
the animals are talking?
Really? Talking animals and hunting season.
Interesting. And in School for Scoundrels with Billy Bob Thornton. I don't really like Billy Bob Thornton. I'm sorry. I won't go see any movie he's in. I'm sorry. Yeah. The last movie I saw him in was that one with Robert Duvall. He played the preacher. Was it The Prophet or something like that? I forget what it was. He played Robert Duvall played a Southern evangelist.
Yeah, I think it was called The Prophet.
The Prophet. That's the last movie I saw with Billy Bob Thornton in. But so I don't know. It's cool. I don't really care too much for him. Do you? No. Oh, hello.
So the other big news coming up. This is the second week of premiere season. So next week is the third and final week. Everything. Well, on the main networks, everything will be up and running next week. So.
Well, it should
it's
be.
Really hard to. Kind of really hard to see what's going to do well until you have everything, all the players on the field.
And it's true. I mean, some of the shows are doing really, really well right now. Might get clobbered when the other shows come premiere or return from their hiatus. You know,
right?
I mean, I'm really interested in how Heroes does in the second week, and as well as the Jericho. You know,
yeah, those will both be interesting to see.
Yeah, because
we'll watch those and keep you posted.
Yeah, because if they drop off significantly, I mean, Heroes' days are probably going to be numbered on NBC, but I imagine they'll switch over to sci-fi. But in Jericho, I mean, hopefully, they'll hold on. They're in a tough time slot there.
Yeah, and Jericho's kind of middle of the road in terms of its numbers, but if it starts going badly, that's one that they might move around, both on the network and then to one of the other affiliate networks like we've talked about a few times.
Yeah. So, Dr. Netranger, the Mad Rocket Scientist, we'll let you go. End of our segment. We thank you for being on for the third season premiere.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Congratulations.
No problem.
Look forward to another 2 years.
Thank you for all your help. And Media Boulevard, we urge everybody to go to MediaBoulevard.com as well as the Media Boulevard magazine, all your pop culture news and information, correct?
That's right. And talk on
the message board. That's right. Go to the message boards and have at me, right?
That's right.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Thank you. And in a moment, we'll be joined by Dr. Professor Koenig Rules with a preview of the Doctor Who season premiere, which is coming up on Friday. And also, he has some Battlestar Galactica news. Very surprising Battlestar Galactica news. So, I won't spoil it. So, wait till for him to come on to spoil it for everybody. And he won't give details, but just a mild spoiler. But interesting. We're looking forward to the Doctor Who. I'd say Heroes had a good feel to it. It had a very mythological feel to it. They're building a mythology. Of course, that comic book is playing into it, the Ninth Wonders, I guess they're calling themselves, and how each of them, each of the characters who are in the story or in the comic book, I like how that Japanese guy is able to transport himself around. And not too much science, not too, the special effects were pretty much, you know, non-existent, but how he's able to transport himself from Japan to New York City, which is, I thought was a pretty cool trick. They zoomed in on him on the subway, and they pulled out, and he's in the middle of Times Square. That was pretty cool. And then the one guy, Milo, whatever the hell his name is, I can't, the, you know, the character names I can't get off the first episode, but the one guy, now I wasn't clear if he could fly or his brother that's running for Congress, if he's the one can fly, or maybe both of them can fly, because they show him falling off the building, and but they didn't show him flying, they showed the brother flying up to catch him, so we'll see. And then the other one, she can walk through fire and everything and not get hurt, the blonde, the hot blonde cheerleader. So that was nice. And then she jammed her fingers into the garbage disposal, and she pulled her hand out. The fingers are all mangled up and bloody. And she pulls her hand back, and the dog's licking the blood. So I think that dog can end up with some kind of superpower now. But then she pulls back, and her hand is fine. And then I think the villain's going to turn out to be her father, who is Jack Coleman. And everybody remembers from Dynasty, he was the one that played the second Stephen Carrington in Dynasty. So, interesting. So, I think now we'll be joined by Dr. Koenig Rules. Exiting the TARDIS, the professor, the mad professor, Dr. Koenig Rules. Are you there, sir?
Yes.
Welcome back to the program.
Yes, I grew about 2 inches in my beard.
So, welcome back. Now, what did you think of Heroes? Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Yes.
It's a little bit, though, it's a little bit confusing with all the characters. You know, the one I really like is the stripper, who sees herself in the reflection, and the reflection is actually her evil side that kills.
Yeah.
I thought that was the best one. The flying one was okay. The Japanese guy who can teleport himself from place to place that was pretty good, too.
Yeah, that was very good. And the cheerleader who...
the cheerleader.
Yeah, she was hot. She kind of reminded me of
she
Rose.
She was hot, yeah.
She reminded me of Rose, kind of. And then she's indestructible, it appears, because she stuck her hand in the garbage disposal, and her fingers healed themselves.
That's right, and the blood was dripping on the floor, and then the dog was drinking the blood.
Yeah, and it's...
That was a little bit sick.
Yeah, so I wonder if the dogs ended up with some kind of power.
Oh,
now.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, because if it's in the blood,
yeah,
you kind of wonder if the dog will become indestructible.
So, and it was a good episode. They said it was a lot to follow, so...
Yeah. I did read some of the reviews. One said that Heroes should be entitled Watching Paint Dry.
Really?
Because it's sort of like that. It's so slow-moving, so some people didn't like the fact that it moved. I thought it moved okay, but some people want that action, aliens type of action with Heroes.
It had a good feel to it. The music was very good. It had a 40 for 100 feel to it.
Yes. I liked Heroes. I'm just wondering how long it will survive. It did well in the ratings, right?
Yes, it did very well, according to Dr.
Net Ranger.
And
we got another doctor?
Oh, we got Doc. He's a... Well, you're a professor of education, and he's a mad rocket scientist. So
he's a mad rocket scientist. How come I can't be a mad doctor of education?
you're the mad professor.
The mad professor, yeah. The doctor is in, but he's out of his mind.
There you go. I'll give you a penny for your thoughts, right?
Yes.
So, and then I enjoyed Heroes. Jericho,
I watched, and it's like, forget it.
Well, it's okay, but...
I mean, it doesn't have aliens in it, so I mean, you know.
It
doesn't have sea monsters in it, so what the hell?
Yeah, well, it was good, but I just don't know how the interest is going to stay with it. You know, the premise of the nuclear blast,
right.
How long can you...
So the the central character in Jericho was on a series called Miracles,
mm-hmm.
but for ABC, and it was 13 episodes, and that was a really good series. He played like a priest who investigated the paranormal and
wow.
joined this group. That was really good. So I like the character.
The cool thing they had it, they added into Jericho, which piqued more interest for me after I was like, I don't know, was the a kid's bus got wrecked, but then there's another bus that had a fugitive. They don't show who he is. Apparently, he killed a policeman because they found this. One of those buses. What do they call them? Transportation.
Oh, the convict bus. Yes.
Right.
And so now there's obviously they're gonna have a convict who's dressed as a cop inside
the city.
The town. And you're not going to know
who it is.
Who it is.
Sounds like the Dead Zone.
What? Sounds like the
Dead
Zone?
They did that on the Dead Zone.
Oh.
Where a criminal impersonated a cop and Johnny Smith had to figure it out.
Yeah. Now, what about Who? Who is really, Sci-Fi is promoting the hell out of it. It's about
time.
Well,
yeah, they should be promoting the hell out of it. After all, it starts this Friday.
2 hour season.
Christmas Invasion, which is an hour episode that they're spreading across 2 hours. I don't know how they're going to do that.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, and then the first episode of season one.
Oh, so it's going to be a three-hour Who?
I mean season two. Well, first episode of season two.
So it's going to be a three-hour Who?
Three-hour Who.
Are you serious? Wow.
Horton Hears
a
Who.
I didn't know that. I thought they were only going 2 hours.
No, it's 3 hours.
3 hours. Oh,
3 hours. Wow. 3 hours.
Amazing. Short. That's good. I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. It's going to be a three-hour...
Yeah, 3 hours starting at 7 o'clock, but then they'll repeat the 7 o'clock one at 10.
Huh.
And I do want to watch Ghost Whisperer.
With the perky Jennifer Love Hewitt, yes.
And Jennifer Love Hewitt's okay in it. I mean, she can act in it.
I like her over and over and over every night.
You like her over?
Hey, I like to show her some love.
Okay, all right. Keep it clean.
Yeah, and, it's good, 3 hours. And then, of course, Friday, tonight, it depends where your time zone is. Of course, if you're Republican, it's Republican Standard Time, which it's always 9/11. But anyway, they have the Heroes is rerun tonight, and they're going to rerun it again on Friday.
I know they're repeating Heroes tonight. They're
yes.
going to do it again on Friday.
Friday on Sci-Fi. It's going to kick off the Sci-Fi Friday.
Wow.
Yes. It's going to be, Night Stalker, Heroes, and Doctor Who.
Oh, that's right. Heroes will be on Sci-Fi,
yes.
right? Or, no, wait a minute. Yeah. I thought Christmas Invasion was supposed to be on it. So.
Heroes is supposed to be on the NBC episode on Sci-Fi every Friday to kick off
Yeah,
the,
but is, are they going to do it this Friday?
Oh, I thought
are they
so.
Put it the 3 hours with Who?
Oh, maybe. Cause
maybe.
And then probably the next week with the Galactica, they'll do
with
the
two-hour
premiere.
Two-hour premiere.
Yes.
Right.
Now you got the a huge spoiler with Galactica, don't you?
Yes, and I have to be careful here because I'm trying to get an interview with Ron Moore.
Oh.
And that's shaping up pretty nicely.
Really? I threw in the towel.
Long ago. I'm persistent.
Ah.
And you get payoff when you're persistent.
Ah.
The thing with Battlestar, from what I hear from my source, and I can't reveal too much, is that, to confirm what Ike has reported about deaths occurring on Battlestar, there will be some deaths that occur, one of which is going to be very, very significant in the second half of the third season.
Ooh.
And that's about I know a lot more, but that's all I'm at liberty to reveal.
Really?
Right now.
Yeah.
The episode will be episode 316.
A very significant now. How
a
significant?
Very significant.
Is it a Cylon or is it a
human?
All I can say is it's so significant you will want to tune in.
Is it a he or she?
What?
Is it he or she?
I can't
say. Is it a dog?
Is it Muffet?
No, it's significant,
ooh.
Sean, and probably as the weeks go on, I can say more.
I got a question.
Yes.
Will Sean stop watching it if this person dies?
Uh-oh.
He'll continue to watch it, but he'll be affected by it.
Uh-oh. That means it was a previous guest on S2D?
Oh, I didn't say that.
Piecing it together.
I didn't say it was a previous guest. All I can say is you would be affected. I think everyone would be affected by it. Everyone would
really
be affected by it who's a Battlestar Galactica fan.
I don't think they dare kill off Starbuck. I really don't think so. I mean,
well, all I can say is I think they have to kill off some characters to make it.
Really?
That's
the spoiler.
What is that?
Actually, Invincor, he's got in here the Friday lineup. 8 to 9:30 is the Christmas Invasion.
So it's 8 to 9:30.
Correct, and then 9:30 to 10:30 is New Earth.
New Earth. Okay, then.
So 2.5
is Heroes going to be shown at 7 then?
I believe so. Yes.
All right, so they're showing Christmas Invasion not in a 2-hour time slot, but an hour and a half time slot.
Yes.
Well, so totally confused me when.
What?
Doctor Who's on.
Doctor Who's going to be on at 8 o'clock from 8 until.
8 o'clock Central time, right?
No.
No, what?
8 o'clock. Wait. 8 o'clock our time here in Vegas. 8 till 10:30. So
what is it? 8 o'clock our time in Chicago.
You got me. You got to figure that out on your own. I only know Republican Standard Time. It's 9:11. But
9:11.
It'll be two and a half hours.
You're cute. You know.
It'll be 2.5 hours. It'll be on this Friday. Set your VCRs.
Okay. All right.
Heroes be on 7 to 8, and then from 8 until 10:30.
Okay, I think I could probably watch Ghost Whisperer.
From 8 until 10:30, it's Who.
Right.
Here in Vegas.
And then is it possible for me to do a critique of Who next week?
Absolutely.
By the way, Supernatural is on Thursday night.
Oh, who cares?
No, what are you saying?
Trash.
It's a great show. I got the box set, and we find out what happened to the sons and the father in the crushed Impala.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the father goes after the creature that killed his wife.
Mm.
It's good. It's a good show, Sean.
Really?
Do you remember the old Night Stalker series?
Oh, yes.
It's like that, except with two guys instead of an aged reporter.
Huh. Well,
it's
we'll
good.
See.
It really is good.
Really. Actually, Canuck is saying he or she, whoever it is, thinks it's Rosalind, and it happens before 3:16. Ooh. No. And Vincor hopes.
I can say that right now, okay? I can say that right now. It's not Rosalind, and it doesn't happen before 3:16.
Oh, and Vincor's hoping.
It happens 3:16. Significant death, and that's all I'm saying.
And Invincor
is
hoping.
All I'm saying, but it's not Roslyn. Roslyn will be around.
Really, Invincor is hoping it's Ty, and then of course, Darth Chaney is hoping it's Starbuck, or Blanders, they're both. And then Giorgio is hoping it's Baltar that gets killed. Yeah, I don't know. If they kill off Baltar, it's going to ruin the dynamic of the series. So
yeah, I know. That's all I can reveal right now because I want to be a good boy for Ron Moore when I interview him.
I've tried. I don't know. And I get into these political arguments over on Mrs. Ron's thread. I think I got in trouble with that.
What happened?
No. I don't get in trouble with her. I think I'm laying it down as I see it on the thread there, Mrs. Ron's thread. And I start up a whole, open up a whole can of worms over there.
Well, you can open up a whole can of worms because that's Ron Moore's second wife.
Ooh.
From what I understand.
I don't
want to
get into that.
Ron
I don't want to get into that.
I
don't
really want to know what happened to that first
I don't
want to
get into that. A little bit. What? And, I can find most of my comments over to the S2DRadio.com message board, courtesy of Media Boulevard. When are you going to start getting back into Media Boulevard?
Sean, I'm so busy with school and everything and extracurricular activities. It's sort of like...
You got to ditch one of these.
I haven't even gone back to my blog in a while.
Oh, that's right. Your blog critics. You should ditch the blog critics and go over to the...
Well, I didn't ditch them. I just don't have the time.
Really?
Know?
Well,
so
I mean...
Busy.
How about Galactica Station? You can still go over there.
Oh, yeah, I do. I do my share at Galactica Station. And,
why don't you just copy and paste your post from Galactica Station over on Media Boulevard?
I should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's all part of the team. You know,
I'm also the moderator at Media Boulevard, so I should really be checking things out there, right?
I think so. So anyway, we got a lot to look forward to Friday with Doctor Who.
Yes,
and
definitely. And, David Tennant is an excellent substitute for Eccleston. I really like him. Mm-hmm. I told you he played a killer in a miniseries in 2005 that aired on BBC America last week. Excellent.
Really?
Excellent actor.
Yeah, Io Raptor says, we miss you, KR.
What?
Io Raptor misses you on Media Boulevard.
Okay, well, I'll make a visit to Media Boulevard and give everyone kisses, all right?
Now, what are you going to...
Including the guys, all right?
Were you going to bid on something at the Star Trek auction next week at Christie's?
There's a Star Trek auction?
Yes. Christie's is going to auction off several thousand items from Star Trek, including the Captain Picard's jumper, between $6,000 and $8,000. Or you can buy Kirk's uniform from the Wrath of Khan.
What about his toupee?
No. I think the rats are bought that a while back. And then the Shatner costume is between $6,000 and $8,000.
Jeez. No, I'm not going to buy any of that.
If I bought that, I'd wear it every day.
I'm a Star Trek fan, but it's like 10 and or 20 bucks, not 6,000.
How about
bucks.
The Picard flute, the inner light flute he was playing? You could buy
the flute when he was getting old and he married and stuff like that.
Yeah, you should buy that. Or the Enterprise A 8-foot model, $15,000 to $25,000. It was used in the motion picture.
Wow, you really are very knowledgeable about
this.
Yes,
well, I'm holding up the USA Today.
Oh, okay.
And also, the chair, the original chair for Kirk from the series, they made a new one for Deep Space Nine, and they used that in Trials and Tribulations. That's going to go for between $8,000 and $12,000.
So, are you going to buy one of those things, Sean?
Well, I like to have that chair. Can you imagine sitting in front of TV with the Kirk chair from the series?
Chair.
That'd be kind of nice.
Actually, sit in the same seat that William Shatner sat in.
Yeah. But actually, not
behold, or at least go to the washroom where he sat. Sorry.
Well, that's not the chair he sat. It's a replica of the chair.
No,
the other one's
in
long
the toilet
gone.
Or not?
What?
Sorry.
That's the one where at what's his name? That's where Cisco and them sat in, I think.
Okay.
Uh oh. All right, Koenig,
we're
let
out
go.
Time.
Here comes the TARDIS. We'll talk to you next week for your review of the Doctor.
The TARDIS.
Yes. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
And there goes Koenig Rules, the mad professor, off to the land of make-believe or wherever he's from. And I'd like to thank everybody for being on the program tonight for the third season premiere. I thank Michael J.W.